from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, for the next three broadcasts, this program will be originating from somewhere other than the Le Show Dome. I'm headed for Australia for a couple weeks. So this broadcast is being recorded just before I leave. Next week, everything working all right, and you know how probable that is, the program will originate from Melbourne, and then the week after that, a very special broadcast from New Orleans, Louisiana. All this is by way of saying for the next 3 weeks, this program will be slightly less topical than a virtual ointment, but we'll still try to keep you up to date and amused and bored and angry and all those things. All those good things. How you doing? Ladies and gentlemen, the Pentagon has hastily reversed a decision to partially withhold payments to Halliburton, the biggest U.S. contractor in Iraq. How'd they get that deal? On Tuesday of this past week, the United States Armed Forces Administration announced it would hold back 15% of payments on future bills to Halliburton, which was headed in its glory days by Dick Cheney, who's still getting a deferred compensation. It's deferred. It's compensation. It's deferred. It's compensation. It's hours later on Tuesday, the Pentagon did a volte-face. It's French for about face. With no reasons given, and said it would pay Halliburton the full amount. Halliburton subsidiary Kellogg Brown and Root performs a range of work from servicing oil field infrastructure to running army bases. It's been accused of overcharging the U.S. military for some of its services, including fuel and meal supply. Just fuel and meals. It wouldn't overcharge about on anything important. Just fuel and meals, ladies and gentlemen. Critics of the Bush administration have been suspicious about Halliburton winning more than $7 billion worth of Iraq contracts. Cheney strongly denies any involvement in the government awarding Halliburton work, saying he quit the company years ago. He does still own shares in the company. The group's shares have fallen almost 4% on the initial announcement that the Pentagon was withholding some payments. As I say, they've reversed that policy without explanation. If this were an election season, I'd call it a flip-flop. Hello, welcome to the show.
Bobble the bee bop, dee up, dee up, dee up. Beep, bee boo boo, bee boo, bee boo, bee boo, bee boo, bee boo. Bobble the bee bop, dee up, dee up, dee up. I was bopped on the head, tall as a treetop and just to enlighten you. I'm through with shortening bread, cause my baby likes to bebop and I like to bebop too. I was down on my heels, so I hopped to the shoe shop to fix up my boots like new. I got a bee on the jump, cause my baby likes to bebop and I like to bebop too. Bob-a-la-bee-bop, bob-a-la-bee-boo, the rhythm is off the beaten track, jack. Bob-a-la-bee-bop, bob-a-la-bee-boo, the squares keep trying just to beat it back. I saw old Uncle Ned do a dance and a flip-flop. He jumped like the Hepcats do. I flipped my lid when he said, my baby likes to bebop and I like to bebop too. Bob-a-la-bee-bop, bee-op, bee-op, bee-op. Bob-a-la-bee-boo, the rhythm is off the beaten track, jack. Bob-a-la-bee-bop, bob-a-la-bee-boo, the squares keep trying just to beat it back. I saw old Uncle Ned do a dance and a flip-flop.
He jumped like the Hepcats do.
I flipped my lid when he said, my baby likes to bebop, and I like to bebop too. I like to bebop too. I like to bebop too.
Bebop. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And we have a lot to talk about today, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, John Kerry, after due consideration, has now announced that even if he knew more than he knows now, he'd still vote to authorize the war. Just to be, you know, look, just to emphasize the strength of the position. On the other hand, Dateline Lincoln, Nebraska, Republican Representative Doug Berreuter says he now believes the U.S. military attack on Iraq was unjustified. Republican Congressman Doug Berreuter. Goodbye, Doug. Quote, I've reached the conclusion retrospectively, now that the inadequate intelligence and faulty conclusions are being revealed. Doug, didn't you listen to this broadcast? Excuse me, I'm interrupting his quote. That all things being considered, it was a mistake to launch that military action. Berreuter wrote that in a letter to constituents in the final days of his congressional career. Yeah, now that he's getting out, he fesses up. This is especially true, he says, in view of the fact that the attack was initiated, quote, without a broad and engaged international coalition, unquote. Well, there's 30 nations. Doug, there's 30 nations. There's Estonia. There's the little country that's east of whatever. Quote, knowing now what I know about the reliance on the tenuous or insufficiently corroborated intelligence used to conclude that Saddam maintained a substantial WMD arsenal, I believe that launching the preemptive military action was not justified, he wrote to his soon-to-be ex-constituents. As a result of the war, he said, our country's reputation around the world has never been lower, and our alliances are weakened. Repeating, this is a Republican. A soon-to-be ex-Republican, I guess. He'll take the Zell Miller seat on the Democrat. No, he's leaving. He's a senior member of the House International Relations Committee and vice chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. And now he figures out that the intelligence was Doug. The four-page letter represented a departure from his support for a 2002 House resolution authorizing the president to go to war. That is to say, a flip-flop. His vote to authorize the use of military force was based on faulty or misrepresented intelligence, Bereuter said. Left unresolved for now is whether intelligence was intentionally misconstrued to justify military action, he said. Again, a Republican, leaving it open whether the intelligence was deliberately misconstrued. That's bashing. That's potential bashing. In a floor statement accompanying his vote back in 2002, Bereuter argued that the international coalition be broadened and that the administration adequately planned for the consequences of war. Bereuter pointed to a list of negative consequences arising from the war. Quote, the cost in casualties is already large and growing, he said, and the immediate and long-term financial costs are incredible. From the beginning of the conflict, he continued, it was doubtful that we would be seen as liberators, but instead increasingly as an occupying force. Now we are immersed, he continues, in a dangerous, costly mess, and there is no easy and quick way to end our responsibilities in Iraq without creating bigger future problems in the region and in general in the Muslim world. Unquote. Bereuter sent the letter to constituents who have contacted him about the war. He departs from the House after 26 years to become president of the Asia Foundation on September 1st. That's safe. Nothing's bad's going on in Asia yet. Congress and the administration must, he writes, learn from the errors and failures related to the attack in the aftermath. The toll in American military casualties and those of civilians, physical damage created, financial resources spent, and the damage to the support and image of America abroad all demand such an assessment and accounting, unquote. In addition to a massive failure or misinterpretation of intelligence concerning weapons of mass destruction, Bereuter said the Bush administration made a number of errors in prosecuting the war, despite warnings about the consequences. Quote, American and coalition forces were inadequate in number to take effective control of Iraq. Other mistakes included disbanding the Iraqi army and placing responsibility for reconstruction with the Defense Department instead of the Department of State, he said. Doug Bereuter, we hardly knew ye. He's gone. Before we can even say, Doug, you were on the committee that, didn't you? But why didn't they? But Doug Bereuter, ladies and gentlemen. You've seen the television commercial. No, not that one. By the way, speaking of that one, the Swift Boat veterans, I have just one question. And I'm gonna go out on a limb here, not Doug Bereuter's limb, a limb of my own, and say that the very asking of this question is, as the lawyers like to say, dispositive. Look it up. Okay, here's the question. The Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. All right, there's been a lot of to-ing and fro-ing about these guys. The guys who have come forward with a TV commercial and a book saying that John Kerry lied about his injuries, about the conditions under which he rescued Jim Rassman from... was it the Mekong River? Some river over there. River runs through Vietnam, you know that. And the Washington Post said that one of the Swift Boat veterans, blah, 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 said on his citation for merit that he had been under enemy fire. He denies it, says John Kerry wrote that up. Anyway, you know about the entire controversy. I've now reviewed it for you. Kerry, this week, shot back saying that these people were being paid for by Bush funds and called on the president to repudiate the commercial. The president's spokespeople said, we repudiate all commercials not paid for by us and the other candidate. These are commercials paid for by independent 527s, which supposedly wasn't going to happen after McCain-Feingold. Anyway, here's the question, that the mere asking of which is, as the lawyers say, dispositive. The Swift Boat Veterans for Truth say that their motive in coming forward after all these years, is to prevent John Kerry, a man whom they regard as unfit to lead, to prevent him from being elected president of the United States. It's not to support George W. Bush. It's purely out of their concern that we might make this serious mistake of choosing John Kerry to be our leader. The question is, why didn't they come forward during the primaries? You could have knocked him out of the box right then with this. There wouldn't have been time for him to mount a reply and a counterattack. If they really were concerned about John Kerry not ascending the slipperiest pole in American public life, how come they just didn't blast him with this stuff in January, in February? Unless, of course, they have other motives. Ladies and gentlemen, Iraq soccer midfielder Saeed. You've seen this other commercial where the Bush administration is bragging on the fact that two new countries are in the Olympics this year, freed from their dictatorships, bragging on Iraq and Afghanistan participating in the Olympics. Of course, Iraq did participate in the Olympics under the Hussein regime, but then it was Uday running the show. Well, an Iraqi soccer player, midfielder Sa'il Sadir, has a message for U.S. President Bush. In the commercials, the flags of Iraq and Afghanistan appear as a narrator says, at this Olympics, there will be two more free nations and two fewer terrorist regimes. Quote, Iraq as a team does not want Mr. Bush to use us for the presidential campaign, Sadir told Sports Illustrated through a translator. He can find another way to advertise himself. I don't think he's... That was what Dick Cheney should have said to Senator Leahy. Go advertise yourself. Ahmed Manajid, who played as a midfielder on the Iraqi team, had an even stronger response when asked about the TV spots. Quote, how will he meet his God having slaughtered so many men and women? Manajid said. He has committed so many crimes. The Bush campaign was contacted about the Iraqi soccer player statements. It has yet to respond. To a man, members of the Iraqi Olympic team said they're glad that Uday is gone. But they also find it offensive that Bush is using their team for his own gain when they do not support his administration's actions in Iraq. Quote, my problems are not with the American people, says Iraqi soccer coach Adnan Hamad. They're with what America has done in Iraq. Destroy everything. The American army has killed so many people in Iraq. What is freedom when I go to the national stadium and there are shootings on the road? He asked. These are our friends. Sadir used to be the star player for the professional soccer team in Najaf. I want the violence and the war to go away from the city, he says. We don't wish for the presence of Americans in our country. We want them to go away. Manajid hails from the city of Fallujah. He says coalition forces killed his cousin, who was fighting as an insurgent, and several of his friends. In fact, Manajid says if he were not playing soccer, he would for sure be fighting as part of the resistance. Everyone in Fallujah, he said, has been labeled a terrorist. These are all lies. Fallujah people are some of the best people in Iraq. The war is not secure, says Hamad. Many people hate America now. The Americans have lost many people around the world. And that is what is happening. Okay, anyway. So, you know, get clearances before you use these guys in commercials next time. That's good advice from the good hands people here at Le Show. And now, from reality to fantasy. I'm being complimentary to both sides here. The Great Ormond Street Hospital for Sick Children in London, which has earned millions of dollars and royalties from the copyright on Peter Pan, is commissioning a sequel to the beloved masterpiece. The hospital announced a nationwide competition throughout Britain to find an author worthy of the job. And, of course, a king of pop to star in the title role. No, not maybe not. The country's leading publishers and literary agents will be approached to each nominate two writers who will be asked to submit a synopsis and sample chapter by January 31st. Andrew Fain, chairman of the special trustees of the hospital children's charity, supervising the copyrights at the hospital, would be very happy to attract very, very talented writers like J.K. Rowling, because clearly that would give the sequel a high profile. I would be very pleasantly surprised if that happened. But wouldn't it also be wonderful if we discovered a marvelous writer who is slightly less well-known and would charge less? He didn't say that. Copyright on the novel runs out in Britain and Europe in 2007. Earnings from a sequel will continue to help boost hospital funds. The approved sequel will also, according to the hopes of the hospital, deter unauthorized attempts to cash in on the land of everlasting youth. Who would do that? Who would be so crass? Oh. Last year, the hospital became involved in a costly battle in California to suppress a revisionist updating of the story in which Peter Pan grows up into happy adulthood. It sounds like a shrink wrote that. The special trustees have set out strict guidelines for the sequel. It includes all the original central characters. The trustees say both the setting and the characters can be contemporary. So, for example, Captain Hook could be a modern-day villain. But the sequel should reflect the heart of the original book and be, quote, magical. Peter Pan remains in copyright in the United States until 2033. Speaking of magic, investigators this week drew back the veil on the frenetic opulence of Michael Jackson's Neverland Ranch, revealing a mansion filled with a breathtaking mix of classic taste and theme park folly. This is from Agence France-Presse. It's the wire service John Kerry reads. No, come on. He doesn't look French. The secret glimpses behind the gates of the Tudor mansion came in a video shot when police and prosecutors searched the house last year. The video was shown to the court hearing this week. The video shows a team of 40 investigators swooping on the house last November 18th, showing Jackson's eclectic juxtaposition of dark wood paneling, elegant chandeliers, and suits of armor, with giant and luridly colored models of cartoon and movie characters. Surprised officers gasped. These have to be fairly inexperienced officers to gasp at this. Gasped as they caught sight of a life-size statue of Superman. That'll make a cop gasp. And a statue of Star Wars robot R2-D2 in part of the house that contained a children's classroom and a room seemingly filled to the brim with dolls. A doll's house the size of a large armoire dominated one of the toy rooms, while a model of a large baby holding both of its hands in the air, grasping at rattles, rose up in another part of the room. A small child's bed, littered with, don't get ahead of me, toys and dolls, was nearby, as were rocking horses and an artwork made up of huge wooden building blocks marked with the letters of the alphabet. The peak revealed a sprawling and often cluttered home split between dark and classical European style and a world of childish fantasy. Large and ornate lampstands in the form of Venus-like female figures lined corridors, while bronze eagles and a grand library could all be seen in the footage of the property that's said to be worth more than $12 million. The private quarters of the King of Pop, the Quondam King of Pop, were guarded, or the Whilom King of Pop, were guarded by a suit of medieval-style armor and contained an inner sanctum to which detectives in court said only Jackson and his maid had access. After entering those private quarters, the detectives could be seen sweeping past a striking statue of the cartoon character Daffy Duck, dressed in a mauve zoot suit outfit. You think Michael and Kim Jong-il would get along? They both are Daffy Duck fans. I'm seeing a kind of a marriage made in Daffy Duckville. Then they came back to the story. Then they came face to face with a giant green model of the Incredible Hulk, before passing an enormous photograph of a smiling, freckle-faced boy that covered an entire wall. In a bizarre twist, detectives could be seen pulling a modern glass-domed jukebox filled with records away from a wall in the games arcade, revealing a secret door leading to Jackson's wine cellar. Following the raid, Jackson said he could no longer live at Neverland as its sanctity has been violated. He's been living in a series of expensive hotel suites and was recently reported to have been inquiring about real estate in Miami. Coincidentally, in the same state where O.J. Simpson sought refuge, since Florida protects personal property from legal judgments. But whether he settles in Florida or not, it's clear, at least for the moment, Jackson will not be going back and sleeping under the gaze of the Incredible Hulk.
Saying never land again. It is what it is, what it is, what it is, what it is, and that would be then. And I give, 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 and I want some back. Where do I sign? Where do I go? Did I miss a page? I don't know. Wise old Buddha.
sifting through the sand for sugar. Sugar, sugar.
Gotta find me some gold, gotta find me someone to hold.
Sugar, sugar.
Gotta find me some gold, gotta find me someone to hold.
Slipping through my fingers,
so sweet to hold.
Sifting, sifting,
sifting, sifting.
This is Le Show, and time now for our copyrighted feature, don't you know, the Apologies of the Week.
We're so sorry.
The global sportswear giant Nike has apologized and removed a commercial from Australian television after it was labeled insensitive. In the wake of the conviction of Gavin Hopper, a leading tennis coach, on child sex charges. The advertisement, released globally to coincide with the Olympics, features a group of teenage girls swooning over their handsome tennis coach. In a bid to impress him, each of the girls turns into Serena Williams. Dateline Hampton, Iowa. The 21 Hampton volunteer firefighters who threatened to quit if they weren't allowed to have beer in the firehouse have backed away from their demand and have apologized to the community. Jeff Ferris, who resigned as fire chief on August 9th, has been reinstated. Numerous BART passengers riding a San Francisco-bound train that experienced technical difficulties Monday morning thought for a brief time they had been hijacked. BART spokesman Linton Johnson says the passengers were on a train from Richmond that was having trouble closing its doors around 8 a.m. at the El Cerrito del Norte station. The problem was fixed but caused the train to be delayed by about 11 minutes to make up for lost time. The conductor announced over the train's intercom that the last East Bay stop would be the MacArthur station in Oakland, and the train would skip three stops in order to get to San Francisco more quickly. The conductor told passengers waiting to get off at the last three stops to transfer at the MacArthur station, but the speakers in two of the three train cars weren't working, leaving 200 to 300 passengers with no clue as to what was happening. Many of the passengers were frightened and called BART officials and media outlets to find out what was going on. When they learned of the mistake, they were irate. Quote, "It makes us sick that we scared any passengers," spokesman Johnson said. "We are deeply sorry." He said there's no excuse for the broken speakers. Well, yeah, there is. It's the subway. And they've already been fixed. After being admonished by aldermen last week to be more inclusive, Davenport, Iowa, added 16 square blocks to a proposed downtown cultural and entertainment district that puts Davenport's so-called Rainbow District of gay clubs and bars inside the area. Do you know Davenport had a rainbow district? Neither did I. A new map presented to the City Council's Committee of the Whole extends the proposed district to the Rainbow District, developed in the past few years in an area once known for drugs, crime, and prostitution. But Mark Holloway, director of downtown events and promotions for Davenport One, riled some members of the council subcommittee with his explanation of why the Rainbow District was excluded in the first place. "That's not an area that we want to promote," he said. The next day, Davenport One quickly and forcefully disavowed the remark, saying it was inaccurate and not reflective of the organization's position. "We apologize for the impression that was created and wish to clear up any misrepresentation immediately," says Tara Barney, group senior vice president of downtown economic development. Ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week. Yes, it's copyrighted. Who wants to know? Ladies and gentlemen, farmed salmon accumulated much higher levels of chemical flame retardants than wild salmon. This is according to a study published this week in the journal Environmental Science and Technology. You know that there was a report about farmed salmon having other chemical problems. This is now flame retardants, known as PBDEs. Their level in human blood has doubled over the past 5 years. They're similar in structure to PCBs. Those were once used as insulators in electric equipment. In laboratory studies, flame retardants have been shown to impair development of young rats and rat fetuses and to disrupt their hormone systems. There have been no similar studies in humans. And good thing, too. Otherwise, we'd be scared. "I'm very concerned," says Jeffrey Foran, one of the authors of the study, professor at the School of Public Health, the University of Illinois at Chicago. The study follows a January survey by the same group that showed farmed salmon had higher concentrations of PCBs. Europeans are taking flame retardants off the market as of this week because of health concerns. California is banning PBDEs as of January 2008. The level of flame retardant varied according to where the fish was farmed. European farmed salmon had higher levels. Chilean had the least. The only exception was wild Chinook salmon from Oregon and British Columbia, which had higher levels than some farmed. Researchers attributed this to the fact that the Chinook are large and higher on the food chain. The difference between the wild and farmed salmon stems from their diet. Farmed salmon are fed a concentrated feed high in fish oils and fish meal, which is obtained primarily from small other fish. Wild salmon have a less fatty diet and get more exercise. Salmon of the Americas executive director Alex Trent, representing salmon farmers in Canada, Chile, and the United States, said the study would confuse consumers. Well, here's a way to unconfuse them.
Dinner time at the Holdens.
Oh, who wants more salmon?
Oh, I'll take some, Jesse.
Me too.
Here you go. Oh, my God, no!
Get the fire extinguisher. The salmon's in flames again.
Can't anybody make a salmon product that doesn't erupt in flames?
From the people at Innovent Foods comes the first salmon that's guaranteed not to turn your dinner table into a fiery nightmare.
"Hi, I'm Sammy, the flame-resistant salmon. You can do anything to me. Pour charcoal starter all over me, even marinate me in, ugh, kerosene, and I'll still be as flame-free as the day I was caught. Guaranteed."
Here's how. Sammy is high in naturally occurring PBDEs, the same reason your baby's crib doesn't spontaneously combust, even with a fish high in combustible oil. Many salmon producers think this level of protection is unnecessary.
"But they've never been to our house."
"Thanks, Sammy. We'll never have our salmon dinner end in flaming mayhem ever again."
"It's like I always say, a salmon that catches on fire means a dinner full of hassle. Play it safe with me, Sammy, the flame-resistant salmon. Ask for me by name."
Sammy, the flame-resistant salmon. At fine retailers that display this seal of approval of the National Fireproof Fish Commission. Flame resistance may vary.
Whenever I'm out a-wandering, chasing a rainbow dream, I often stop and think about a place I've never seen,
where friendly folks can gather and raise the rafters high,
with songs and tales of yesteryear until they say goodbye.
Well, there's a puppy in the parlor and a skillet on the stove and a smelly old blanket that a Navajo wove. There's chicken on the table, but you gotta say grace. There's always something cooking at old Joe's place.
Now folks come by around evening time as soon as the sun goes down. Some drop in from right next door and some from out of town.
Pick it.
Puppy in the parlor and a skillet on the stove and a smelly old blanket that a Navajo wove. There's popcorn in the popper and a porker in the pot. There's pie in the pantry and the coffee's always hot. There's chicken on the table, but you gotta say grace. There's always something cooking at old Joe's place.
Now they don't allow no frowns inside, leave them by the door. There's apple brandy by the keg
and sawdust on the floor.
So if you've got hankering, I'll tell you where to go.
Just look for the busted neon sign that flashes
E-A-O's.
Well, there's a puppy in the parlor and a skillet on the stove and a smelly old blanket that a Navajo wove.
There's popcorn in the popper and a porker in the pot. There's pie in the pantry and the coffee's always hot.
There's sausage in the morning and a party every night. There's a nurse on duty if you don't feel right. There's chicken on the table, but you gotta say grace. There's always something cooking at old Joe's place.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's my high privilege and low honor to read the trades for you. From the National Association of Convenience Stores online. Fruit with fizz. I'll read it for you. You could read it for me if you ever were in this seat someday, but this is today. Not the one with Katie. Dateline Corvallis, Oregon, with a little fizz. Will a little fizz tempt consumers to eat five a day? Scientists have developed a technique for carbonating fruit that they hope will make taste buds tingle and encourage kids and adults to eat more fruit. Quote, we see great potential in this application and believe the technology can be used to elevate the food sensory experience for consumers, says Dr. Qingyu Ling. Dr. Qingyu Ling, lead researcher of the technology at the Food Innovation Center at Oregon State University. As such, he says, we're currently working on applying the technology to vegetables, tomatoes, celery, cucumber, with the aim to enhance the flavors for salads and vegetable dishes. See, the problem with you vegetables is your flavors weren't enhanced. Get with the program, says Ling. The carbon dioxide brings no extra flavor, but it can enhance flavor profiles in a variety of food products. Flavor profiles, ladies and gentlemen. It's when the vegetable turns its side to the camera. To carbonate the fruit, it is put into a pressurized chamber at a specific temperature determined by the type of fruit for a half hour to 2 hours. The fruit becomes carbonated via its contact with carbon dioxide. That would be the way. We carried out trials on several thousand people over the past 3 years, and almost 100% of children preferred the fizzy fruit, and over 50% of adults, says Ling. Researchers are also investigating the use of the fizzy technology on other foods, such as yogurt, canned foods, and ice cream. Yeah, can somebody fix the flavor profile on ice cream, please? Would this be a way to take care of global warming, get all that extra carbon dioxide, and just pump it into the vegetables? A question that occurs without an answer when I read the trades for you, copyrighted feature. And now, ladies and gentlemen, on the subject of less carbonated fruit, specifically apples, specifically a few bad apples. Army doctors at the Arab Grave prison west of Baghdad falsified medical records to cover up torture and human rights abuses perpetrated on Iraqi detainees, according to the British medical journal The Lancet. It called for a full inquiry into reform of the military health system to address the failure of Army medical staff to live up to their code of ethics and a professional obligation to care for their patients. The journal published an article by Stephen Miles, a professor of bioethics at the University of Minnesota, saying American Army doctors and nurses had been fully aware of torture and degrading treatment at Abu Ghraib, but did not blow the whistle before an official inquiry began in January. He said the neglect of commonly accepted standards of human rights included failure to maintain medical records, conduct routine exams, and provide proper care of disabled or injured detainees. Medical personnel and information were used to design and implement psychologically and physically coercive interrogations, and death certificates and medical records were falsified. You might stumble over that word. An example of the ethical failings of medical personnel came in November 2003 after Iraqi Major General Mohush's head was pushed into a sleeping bag while interrogators sat on his chest. Dr. Miles said he died, medics could not resuscitate him, and a surgeon stated he died of natural causes. Months later, the Pentagon released a death certificate calling the death a homicide by asphyxia. The Lancet called on healthcare workers who had witnessed ill treatment at Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo Bay to break their silence. Just some apples. Just a few apples, ladies and gentlemen. And an army investigation into the role of military intelligence personnel in the abuse at we're not hearing a lot about Abu Ghraib these days. We'd rather talk about swift boats. An army investigation into the role of military intelligence personnel in the abuse at Abu Ghraib reports the scandal was not just caused by a small circle of rogue military police officers, but resulted from failures of leadership rising to the highest levels of the U.S. command in Iraq. The officials of the defense establishment, speaking on the condition of anonymity because the report has not yet been completed, said the 9,000-page document says a combination of leadership failings, confounding policies, lack of discipline, and absolute confusion at the prison led to the abuse. It widens the scope of culpability from seven MPs who've been charged with abuse to nearly 20 low-ranking soldiers who could face criminal prosecution. However, no Army officers are expected to face criminal charges. The report also implicates five civilian contractors in the abuse. Hey, let's dock their pay by 15%. What do you say? It's still just a few bad apples, isn't it? Depending on what your definition of few is.
They always say a fish stinks from its head. But what if it started at the tail instead? It's just a few bad apples messing up the bunch. A few bad apples bringing up your lunch. Just a few germs can start a common cold. Just a few cells dying off make you so very old. It's just a few bad apples. They're so rotten to the core. A few bad apples, maybe several more. Don't be angry, save the outrage. Don't get mad. It's just those few bad apples, not spending time in chapels. Just those few apples going bad. Just a waste of time looking round the top of that tree. Cause the rotten fruit is hanging so close to you and me. Just a few drums can start up a parade. Just a few defective oranges can spoil the Minute Maid. It's just those few bad apples, and it happens every time. a few bad apples, and those suspects are so prime. You might as well change the uniform to plaid. They'll always be those apples, drinking more than Snapples. It's those few apples.
More from the report on Abu Ghraib. One senior defense official says the investigation specifically decries the fact that many soldiers saw or knew of the abuse and never reported it to authorities. Concerns are also raised about the vague instructions from high-ranking officials about what was allowed during interrogations at the prison. The interrogation policy was misunderstood, and it was one of a few policies that failed, the official said. There was total confusion. Total. Give him credit for that. About the military intelligence tactics, techniques, and procedures. Others say the report criticizes the leadership, but softens its assessment by noting the top officers were focused on the insurgency. Officials say the probe criticizes commanders for essentially failing to pick up the strong signs of abuse as they rose through the chain of command, and for all but ignoring reports from the International Committee of the Red Cross detailing the abuse. Something to look forward to as that report worms its way out. But that is going to put the cap on this week's edition of Le Show. That will be the Le Show Chapeau, going back on the Le Show Tet. The program returns next week at the same time with a new Tet offensive over these same stations on NPR Worldwide throughout Europe on the USIN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. Around the world via the internet, on your computer at two different locations, live and archived, kcrw.com and harryshearer.com. And now, a free download for you at www.audible.com/LeShow. And it would be just like making those apples fizzy if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty. Thank you very much. Uh-huh. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Le Show playlists usually available at the newly refurbished harryshearer.com. A tip of the Le Show chapeau, aforementioned, to the Pittsburgh and San Diego desks for their assistance in today's broadcast. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world. I'm going to check this when I'm in Australia, but I think they recognize it there too, as the home of the homeless.